Welcome once again to The Word on the Hills, with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest for this week, Peggy Diamond Levy. Each week, we visit with a local author, get an introduction to their work, and take a glimpse into their lives. We find out what prompts them to write, and we have an opportunity to hear them read from their work. It's a great pleasure to welcome Peggy to the program today. Peggy is a novelist and biographer, and before her retirement was a branch librarian in Prince Edward County for 17 years. She is a member of the Writers Union of Canada and belongs to a number of local arts associations, including Spirit of the Hills. Do you find are the benefits of belonging to writers' organizations, Peggy?
Well, I think that's the best way that I know of to connect with other writers and to find out what's going on in the larger writing community, find out about conferences and seminars and things like that. Also, most of these organizations have websites, and they often offer membership directories, so if you're interested in networking, you can see who all belongs.
Yes.
I find that very helpful. On a smaller scale, our own Spirit of the Hills, I find wonderful support there from the smaller group of writers. I just enjoy the meetings so much. We have wonderful speakers, and we support each other in our triumphs and in our tragedies. It's just wonderful to feel connected in that way. And then we can also take part together in different ventures, like Word Northumberland in the fall, and the opportunity to put out an anthology of our work.
Yes, and actually I'm going to interpolate here that we're very proud of you for being a finalist for the Speakers Award this year.
Thank you very much.
The Speaker of the Ontario Legislature. And at our last meeting, Peggy was telling us about that occasion, and we were so proud of her.
Thank you.
Though you're well known as a novelist, after publishing 9 adventure mystery novels for children and young adults, the great success of your young adult novel Growing Up Ivy, you've since returned to your earlier interest in history and nonfiction. You've written 3 biographies for Dundurn Press in their series on Canadian women. Why do you like writing biographies and other nonfiction?
I think it's the research that I love. It sort of brings out the detective in me. And I also enjoy the challenge of bringing these historical figures to life. Am I going to be able to breathe enough life into them to make them real for my readers, to make them interesting to contemporary readers?
Yes. Yeah. That is a challenge sometimes, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is.
Because
yeah.
There's such a lot of that is, their circumstances are so different, so one has to give some idea of those, too.
Yes, and it's just the same as when I was writing fiction, I used to live with my main character and wonder, well, how would they react in this situation? And I find I'm doing the same thing with these women.
Yes. Your first book was a history of the movie industry in Trenton. Did the research you did then inspire you to write the biography of Mary Pickford?
Well, it was a head start. It gave me a head start on the research, but actually, I picked Mary Pickford's name from a list of the subjects that my publisher wondered if I'd be interested in writing about. But seeing her name there and knowing her connection with silent movies, and that I had already written a book on silent films of the Canadian history of it, I thought, well, this is a good head start for me. I'll jump in here.
Yes. Yeah. When you're not being asked by the publisher to do a particular thing, what influences your writing choices? Some of your fiction is historical, as well as your nonfiction. You do enjoy doing research, I know, and what resources for research do you find most useful?
Well, to answer the first question, I think the market often determines what I'm going to write. I know that there is a market with Dundurn Press for these biographies of Canadian women, so I'm always interested in doing them. But for the most part, I write for myself. I write what I would like to read, think.
And what resources do you find for research do you find most useful?
Bibliographies more than anything.
Yeah.
First of all, I look for everything that has been written on my subject, and then I start you know, studying the bibliographies in the back of all these books, they will not only lead me to other books I need to read, but they also list the sources that they used, so that there will be archives listed.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, a lot of the archives are digital, so you can find them online.
Quite a miracle, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's wonderful.
Find so much.
Yes.
What about Laura Secord? Was she difficult to research? We don't know much about her life, really, do we? Or do we? Well, we do now. Well, you've written a biography of her, but was it hard to find material?
Actually, it was hard to separate myth from the truth, because Laura Secord was a lot of myth and legend around her, you know, Laura and the cow and all the rest of it. There had been a lot of historical fiction, particularly for young people, written about her. So that was a challenge to find out what happened and what really didn't. And there's almost nothing. There are no details on the first 20 years of Laura's life.
Right.
But the fact that she was born in 1775, at the same time of the American Revolution, I was able to use that kind of information to consider what her childhood must have been like. And her father was in the militia.
Right.
And then also later on, because she was involved, her husband was in the War of 1812, and this is when Laura did her act of heroism. That also provided a wider canvas for me.
Right. What would you like to read from now?
I thought I would like to read a little bit from Mary Pickford, Canada's Silent Siren, America's Sweetheart.
That would be great. Thank you, Peggy.
I'm actually reading from the prologue to the book. One morning, late in the year 1899, Charlotte Smith answered a knock at the front door of her Toronto home. Charlotte was a pretty woman in her mid-twenties, just 5 feet tall, with lustrous blue-black hair and a pleasantly rounded figure. The stranger on the doorstep removed his hat. "I'm here about the room," he said. Charlotte's three young children pressed around her, filling the doorway, eager to see who the caller might be. The little one, three-year-old Jack, or Johnny as he was known when he was on his best behavior, and Lottie, who was 5, had escaped the clutches of their older sister Gladys. Charlotte promptly lifted Johnny into Gladys' arms and shooed them all back inside. "The sign in your window, madam? You have a room for rent?" "Oh, I don't rent rooms to gentlemen, sir," Charlotte said. "I'm a widow, you see. Except for little Johnny there, this is a household of women. I only ever take ladies as lodgers." "But I'm a married man," the stranger hastened to explain. "My wife will be with me in the city, wherever I stay. May I bring her around to meet you? You'll like her. I'm sure you will." The man introduced himself as Mr. Murphy, and seeing that the young landlady seemed likely to reconsider his request, he suggested that he come back later for her answer. Charlotte agreed and shut the door. Now there would be time to discuss the proposal with her invalid mother, Catherine Hennessy, who lived with her, and to confer with her sister, Lizzie Watson, who lived next door. In the end, the family agreed that renting the master bedroom under these circumstances was quite acceptable, and they voted in favor of the well-dressed gentleman. It was impossible to know then, but by renting out the room to Mr. Murphy and his wife, Charlotte was setting in motion a series of events that would change the lives of the Smith family forever. 7-year-old Gladys Smith, so often in charge of her two young siblings, had been born in a house on Toronto's University Avenue on April the 8th, 1892, the same year that the first electric streetcar went into service in that city, and Queen's Park became the home of the provincial legislature. 211 University Avenue was a tiny two-story brick row house with only 6 rooms. There were no houses on the other side of the street, and out front, the bridle path was shaded by flowering chestnuts and red maple trees. Gladys later had pleasant memories of sailing like the wind down that path on her bicycle, and such was her attachment to her first home that when the house was torn down in 1943, she had 20 of its bricks sent to her in California. But that was many years later, long after young Gladys Louise Smith had been dubbed America's Sweetheart and her name changed to Mary Pickford. She was known then as the highest paid woman in the world and today as the most powerful woman in the history of motion pictures.
Thank you, Peggy. Now we'll take a short break.